This week on Retronauts, it's time to put on your dragon pants and pick up your dragon lance and do a little dragon dance. Hello, and welcome to Retronauts. I am your host for this week, Nadia Oxford, the only podcaster who can talk a brass dragon to death. I'm going to talk about Dragonstrike, a game that exists in two very different forms across the PC and the NES. Joining me on this flight are two very special guests. Actually, I should have asked beforehand, William, how do you want me to pronounce your YouTube channel, William SRD?
Yeah, William SRD is perfect.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on. You have some really cool stuff on your channel, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your channel?
Thank you. So I am somewhere between a video game reviewer and essayist. I cover all the video game adaptations of tabletop franchises like Dungeons & Dragons, World of Darkness, Warhammer 40,000, and sometimes smaller franchises as well. Because of that, I have stumbled across a couple years ago and became deeply obsessed with the topic of today's video.
Yeah, I was, someone flagged me down on Blue Sky and said, if you want to talk about Dragonstrike, I got someone right here for you. And looking at your videos, it's like, yep, you're the dude.
Yeah,
glad to have you on board.
It's quite fun sometimes when you cover a game and suddenly you become... That game just becomes like a part of your reputation. It's quite fun. You like adopt a game.
Ironically, my reputation, I'm so sorry that we're leaving out Greg. We'll get to you in a second, I promise to God. My reputation is kind of based a little bit around this game in several ways, but a very interesting link I learned about, and of course I'm just blowing this right up front, is that like I love Quintet. And if you look back, you will find a Quintet episode somewhere in this archive that has me, I think, Anthony John Agnello as well. And the person who made the music for the PC 98 version of Dragonstrike is the guy who did the music for Illusion of Gaia, which is just...
That's
I love
amazing.
That kind of thing, because it's such a unique soundtrack. But we will get to that, I
yeah.
promise you. For now, let's introduce our very special second guest, Greg Mellow. Let it mellow.
I'm very special. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I'm a longtime listener, first time talker.
A longtime drawer.
Longtime drawer. I'm not drawing for this episode. I don't know who has dibsies on this, but I'll get you next time.
Absolutely. There's always time for dragons.
Yeah.
That's why we're here today, actually, because as I said before, we are talking a little bit about Dragonstrike. And just to kind of go over briefly, it is developed by Westwood Associates, published by Strategic Simulations, Inc., SSI. And basically, it's on the PC, it's kind of a combination 3D flight sim slash dragon combat game based very heavily on Dungeons & Dragons War of the Lance, Dragonlance campaign, which is like my jam 100%. You play a Chicken McNobody who starts off on guard duty for the Knights of Salamnia, and as you clear more levels, however, you take up, you get higher challenges, and you kind of take back more enemy territory. And this is something I find extremely interesting about this game because, again, as a Dragonlance nerd, I love the fact that it takes place right at the turning point of the War of the Lance. And to kind of catch you up on the story at this point, the War of the Lance has gone on for a very long time. Tychesis, the aka Tiamat, she's commanding the Bad Dragons, and the Bad Dragons are kicking everyone's ass. And towards the end of the war, actually, that's when the good dragons join in, and they have their own reasons for doing so and their own reasons for sitting it out to this point. But the point is, you are on the back of these dragons, and you are trying to reclaim territory, basically, that has been just ambushed by the forces of darkness. And William, one thing I actually really liked about your video on Dragonstrike for the NES in particular is you mentioned how this is rare for a game, but this is like kind of a dark setting for a game, isn't it? Like you're really on the cusp of defeat. You got to claw your way back.
It absolutely is. And it's part of what makes this game fascinating, because you think like being a dragon rider, that's always what we would associate in fantasy as like the highest power level.
Of course.
You know,
yeah.
That's the highest it goes. Whereas Dragonstrike takes that concept and goes, No, yeah, you're like up against all these seasoned dragon riders and you're some nobody. These guys have been fighting for like 20 years on Dragonback. You're just, it literally says in the manual, you have 2 weeks training.
Yes, I noticed that in the manual. And Lord Gunthar is like, oh, I hate myself because I'm sending children off to war.
Well, in the various dragons you can ride, they have like descriptions on them. And most of them are like, yeah, all the riders of these guys are dead.
Yep.
They've all been dying over and over on these dragons. It's such a unique tone to take. I think that's part of what makes it so cool.
It's funny. I think it's so interesting, like the concept of a dragon rider, because dragons aren't stupid. Mm-hmm. Like they're sentient. You know, it's not like you're riding a horse, but let's just stick a person on there anyways. Like that, it'd be like if I got into a fist fight and I had like a smaller person on my back, just like, bring me closer and like hit him better.
That's how I get into all my fist fights.
I know it's explained in the lore of like, you know, the dragon lances can kill dragons and all that good stuff. But conceptually, it's just very funny how they have to like kind of wrestle with that.
Well, and
I've always wondered about that myself. Yeah.
On top of that, like dragons, especially in Dragonlance, they have ranged breath attacks. So it's like having a guy with a lance on your shoulder while you have a gun. It's even sillier.
Yeah, I think the they get into it in the Dragonlance books. I think it's Dragons of Spring Dawning, the third book in the Chronicles, which gets into the dragon riding part, and that's when things start to turn around. And yeah, there is actually a sequence that I remember very clearly where they only had enough of the kind of the magical silver or whatever to craft a few Dragonlances, and the rest were all just like fake. And the idea was to do psychological warfare because they, you know, they were just regular lances. They would hurt a dragon very badly, but not like really. The magical lances are the ones that really killed them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there was a reason to have people on Dragonback. I understood that. I get that. The one that makes me wonder is Pern, but I don't know. So, you start off actually like this is the kind of the D&D/Dragonlance campaign, catalog of dragons. So you start off on technically one of the weaker ones, bronze. I don't know, like, how it works exactly. It kind of implies that, you know, even the bronze dragon that you're riding at the beginning of the game is quite small next to the white dragons that you chase. And white dragons are usually much smaller than bronze dragons. So the point is, you're on kind of a real, I don't want to say it's like a nag, the equivalent of a nag that you have a horse, but it was definitely not a high-end dragon like a silver or a gold. Right. But you work your way up to that, which makes me kind of sad, because what about the dragon is like, oh, you're leaving me behind. That makes me sad. But you're right. I think the instruction book, William, mentions that the dragons, like, they have had riders that have died one after the other, and it's a good instruction booklet, to be honest. Like all PC games, we'll get into that.
It does a lot of the heavy lifting on world-building the game.
Yeah, because in the game itself, it's quite sparse.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that I just like miss about manuals that I would just obsess about over as a kid. When I'm not at my computer or my game consoles, I just like pore over that. And that's just like the kind of thing where it's just like, cool, this will get me through a car ride or a family dinner or something like that.
Or my dad has the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Which happens a lot.
My dad's doing taxes on our gateway, you know.
My dad's watching the hockey game.
Yep.
There's also the NES version of this game, released in 1992, I think published by Pony Canyon. It's something else entirely. Obviously, the NES wasn't really capable of handling the 3D graphics of the PC version of the game, so it's a top-down, kind of an auto-moving shooter. It doesn't really, it scrolls like up as well as side to side, and it has two panes of gameplay, like the top and the bottom. Like you can fly high, you can fly low, and depending on the pane you're on, that's the, you know, that the enemy attack, will either go above you or below you. But in the, as a trade-off, you know, you have to be either above or below, depending on the enemy, to use your breath attack and kill them. It's a hard game. Again, it takes place like around the War of the Lance, but unlike the PC version, unfortunately, they don't have the real bitchin' pixel rendition of Larry Elmore's artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I miss most. You have the title screen, which is kind of, meh. But, the NES version of the game, we'll get into that because it has its own merits, I find. Like, I don't like it very much, but it is certainly worth talking about. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about how we got into Dragon Strike specifically. I'll start. I was in school, let's say this was around 1998, and someone in my school got stabbed, and everything went into disarray that day. So I was just like, well, I guess I'm not going to bother going back to class, so I'm just going to go to the computer lab and talk to this one guy about Final Fantasy VI, and I did that. And while I was there, someone had left behind an old GamePro magazine from, like, 1992. And so I just kind of started going through it, and I saw a review for Dragon Strike on the NES. And I was a huge, like, Dragonlance fan by that point, and I had no idea they were Dragonlance-based games. So I was like, wow, that's incredible. And the review was like, honestly, this isn't great. It's pretty much what you would expect. But that's how I learned that there was this game out there, because the review mentioned this is an adaptation of the 3D game, which is much better. So I eventually found that game and played it. I remember playing it actually on I had like a Toshiba 486 laptop that I used to write on, like some of the first laptop I got, so I could do some of my writing like on the go. And I put the game on that, and works quite well. Like, it's a real low spec DOS game.
Mm-hmm. Westwood's like talent for running or for making games that run real smooth was on display with both Dragon Strike games. They both just like, they feel pretty good and they run just amazingly.
Yeah. One thing I do have to say about Dragon Strike for the NES, thinking back on it, there's no flicker. There's no slowdown.
Yep.
And that's, you know.
Yeah, I guess there isn't. Which is good, because there are a lot of bullets.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot going on that screen. But how about you, William? How did you get into Dragon Strike?
Yeah. So for me, it was when I started making YouTube videos about D&D video games, I kind of stumbled across it. And I came at this from the side of I'm a long time like D&D player, played video games my whole life. But for some reason, I never actually put the two together. I never played very many D&D video games. So I have always been kind of coming at it from a tabletop fan who's like going back and discovering all these games I missed. And then while I like, when I was first getting into that, I just started looking at this like broad list of all the D&D video games, which is a crazy number of games. It's like 80 of them.
Wow. That's
and
a lot.
The one that right away, like the moment I looked at the first list, I was like, hold on. A flight simulator. There's a D&D flight simulator. What's going on here? And so I just became like hyper fixated on this. And it was one of the first ones that I ended up covering. I think it was like the fourth. And nice. Then just over the years, I just kept on spiraling into the fact that the Dragon Strike video game is more like a forgotten Dragon Strike sub-franchise, and I just keep on spiraling and being like, oh, there's a Dragon Strike NES version, I should cover that. Oh, there's a Dragon Strike board game that isn't related, I should cover that. Oh, there's another Dragon Strike board game that's a spiritual successor to the original video game. Oh, wow, I should cover that. So
yeah, I love that there is a spiritual successor. That's great. How about you, Greg? What did you How'd you get into this mess?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a dual-pronged approach, because I was introduced to D&D by a weird kid in my Spanish class. Him and his dad, who went by the name Dave the Giant, both in and out of game. So
I love that.
That's the best way to learn about D&D. And then my dad was one of those guys who would just bring home computer games from work that like a friend gave him on a sketchy looking floppy disk with like Xerox manuals, because you need the manuals to play the game.
For the piracy checks.
Yep. And my dad was just like really into like flight sims and stuff like that. Like we had F-19 on the DOS, which was fun also. But I was always more of a fantasy guy, and he brought home Dragon Strike, and he's like, get a load of this shit.
I take this shit out.
And then I got a load of that shit at a very slow pace, because my computer was not very good at the time.
One frame at a time, slowly. Yeah.
Once I got to those dragons, I saw some real shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By then, I was 18.
Yeah.
You'd aged and become like a family man and everything.
Yeah, you just let
I had already read all 190 of the Dragonlance novels by then.
Oh, are there 190, or is that just a number you pulled?
It's about 190.
It's about 190.
Wow.
I started scrolling through, and then I was like, I'll take their word for it, 190.
I think something like 60 of them are short story collections, but it's still a lot of books.
Yeah.
It's a lot of dragons and a lot of lances. Are you guys fans of Dragonlance specifically?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm familiar. I read the first trilogy, and I haven't really gone past that. I know there's a second trilogy that people seem pretty hot on, but no, just the first three books.
I actually recently reread the Chronicles and the Legends, and Legends is still incredible. That's still an incredible trilogy. I recommend it wholeheartedly. It's a much, much more mature than... I mean, I love Chronicles, but it's definitely like, this is a D&D campaign that we turn into a story.
Yeah.
Legend is much more... You really see Margaret Weiss mature as a writer there.
Yeah.
Cool.
She's pretty great.
I'm actually doing... Awesome. Right in parallel with this, I'm doing a Dragonlance read-along book club podcast thing. As well, and it's really fun to revisit them, because I haven't reread Dragonlance since I was a kid. It was probably my first like epic fantasy series that I read.
So you must know Shivam, the bot, or do you?
I don't actually.
Oh, I got to introduce you to, like, he is the master of Dragonlance.
Oh, fantastic! Would love to meet them then.
And I think he has a podcast about Dragonlance.
Oh, cool.
I wouldn't mind like going on and there was a summer where I got grounded for having bad marks, and so I got my NES taken away from me, and I went to the library and I discovered Dragonlance, and just really kind of got. I was always into dragons and stuff like that as a weird kid. I think like all of us. I have to ask one question, Greg. Was Dave the Giant or whatever? Was he giant? Was he really big?
He was huge. He was a very large metal singer. He had this real low voice.
He deserves
the name then. Yeah.
Yeah, he totally earned it. And he was like a lot of fun just hanging out with like his son and this random kid from Spanish class and, you know, punching slimes and stuff in a dungeon. And it was great. It was the perfect, when you're a kid and you don't know what the heck D&D is, that's like such a great introduction to the game. I still think about him every so often. I saw him pretty recently, and he's still much taller than me. So.
Well, everyone's taller than me. I have to ask you, as an artist, were you kind of inspired by those really bitching pixelized versions, like I said, of Elmore's artwork, like that kind of preceded every level?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I love about this era of games, and this game is no different. I love when you beat a level and you see like the new thing, and, you know, a flying castle, a half acid melted corpse.
Yeah.
It's like a reward, you know? And it's great. And especially on a CRT, I mean, it's great in high definition. And you know, you can slap some shaders on there, these days. It's not too hard, but there's just something about it where, and like, you just sit with it. Like the game like goes to black for a second. It's almost like your computer's having a hiccup.
Yeah.
And like the music cuts out, and then you just see the splash of something amazing. And like the all 20 seconds of Dragonlance's soundtrack kicks in. And
yeah,
it's like, hell yeah. I'm a cool guy on a cliff with a bitchin' mustache. And this is great. Yeah, I loved the artwork for this. And it's freaking dragons. That's the thing that I think is like really funny about Dragonlance as a whole, is that like a lot of people who just aren't into D&D or just like, oh, sweet dragons. Oh, there's books. Oh, there's, you know, a calendar or whatever. Oh, there's figures. And then they, like, it's just like a rabbit hole that goes deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you're playing like a goddamn dragon flight sim game. That's, so yeah, like I mentioned before, this is just like a perfect marriage of all the things I loved. And yeah, the artwork in this is great.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things about the Dragonlance artwork is, because, you know, you got really cool representations of characters and dragons on screen. And then
yeah,
quietly, if you take your eyes off the foreground, you realize that this is where Larry Elmore was doing just the best landscape work. Just
yeah,
gorgeous landscapes he was drawing. And most people don't look at it because you look at the subjects, but wow, he did incredible landscapes.
He is an artist I admire very much because, as I understand it, he had a stroke and had to reteach himself how to draw.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. It was a long time ago that I read that, so I might be inaccurate. But as I understand it, like, I don't know if it was his dominant hand. I think it might have been. But he had to basically rehabilitate himself. And he's just got to, when I see his art, I think Dragonlance. And I'm so glad they went with that for Dragonstrike.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about who developed the game, because they are also responsible for classics like Command & Conquer, and that would be Lewis Castle and Brett Sperry. Is that pronounced right? Brett Sperry? That's what I love that. Yeah. I also want to point out that Lewis Castle is seemingly responsible for The Lion King on consoles back in the day, and in which case, I am sad. Because that game hurt me deeply. Those monkeys.
It looks good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful game. It sounds great, too, on the SNES.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I played that. It's been a forgotten memory till right now. Huh.
It is legendary because, as we were saying, it's a gorgeous game, gorgeous soundtrack, but it was one of those games that they screwed up because, oh my God, rental market. So
yeah,
they took a really hard level and really frustratingly hard level and made it like the second level. And wow, so it's just like a major drop off, which is a shame until you remember the cheat code, which is B-A-R-R-Y, and lets you go to any level you want. So do it, kids. Don't suffer the wildebeest stampede.
Yeah. 90s Disney platformers were like a blockbuster staple.
Yep.
Yes.
But also extremely hard.
Can't tell you how many times I went through that Aladdin game.
Yep. So many apples.
For the Genesis, I've never actually played the SNES one. Like, I've been meaning to, because I hear it's better. I mean, I played the Genesis one to death. It was one of those games where you're over at a friend's house, you would rent Aladdin because it was like everyone could agree on it. At least it wasn't the Simpsons games, which is another thing I suffered at sleepovers. Like, hey, we're going to rent a game. Oh, boy, which game is that? Bart versus the World. Oh, God, kill me now.
Yeah, I only played the Genesis version as well. We had, like, we would borrow one of my dad's friends' cabins, like for a 2-week period every summer. And they had a Sega Genesis there, and Aladdin was like the only game on that thing that I enjoyed. Because I could only frustrate myself on Echo the Dolphin so many times.
Oh, God. Yeah. Just kind of a brief tangent. One of my favorite stories about my personal stories is that when I was a kid, I was in the hospital for a while after surgery. And I was really depressed until I realized they had an SNES. And I was like, and the only game they had was Mario Was Missing. So I'm just like, oh God, this is making it worse. Get me out of the encourage me to get out of the hospital. Just go home.
You're playing a bad game and you're learning. And you're sick.
And you're sick. And your face is swollen to the size of a basketball because you just had jaw surgery. What a life. Anyway, one thing I found very interesting in your video about Dragon Strike on the NES, William, is you're talking a little bit about Westwood as a studio that was used to adaptations, but maybe not so much the remake that Dragon Strike was on the NES. Did you want to talk a little bit about that at all?
Sure. Dragon Strike as a Westwood property, just in general, is kind of an interesting point in their development history, because they were very much being groomed by SSI to be one of their top studios to make D&D sub-licensed games. And they had just made Hillsfar, and it was promising that they managed to push the pre-existing engine so far, but Hillsfar still wasn't very good. and then they still got the chance to make Dragon Strike and, you know, do something very experimental. And it did okay. And then right after, they did Eye of the Beholder, just like the best D&D video games of the era. You know, so it was like a stepping stone of you know, getting into form to make Eye of the Beholder. It's the last step before, you know, the legend. And when it, like, previously they had done just so much work with game remakes and stuff, or not so much game remakes, but like ports to other consoles of different video games. And a lot of the time, the ports they made were more like remakes because they were kind of trying to like flex their skills a little bit, show off, see if they could get themselves some new stuff. So when they ported Dragon Strike over to NES, it was just a new game entirely because that's just kind of how Westwood did things.
Which happened a lot on the NES.
Yeah.
And that game, we'll talk a little bit about the NES game now. It's the NES game, even though it's not perfect, I find that it has some interesting differences in its environments. You go to space.
Yes.
Space. That's where the old dragon communism untouched in space.
You get city battles too, and that's very welcome.
That was very neat. Like to be honest, I have not really finished this game. On the NES, you get your choice of three dragons, that is bronze, silver, gold, same as the PC game, and you get your choice of difficulties, but it's hard. Even on easy, it's just I went for the silver dragon, and you learn quite quickly that the silver dragon's very quick, but harder to control. And one thing that will kill you, or rather get you in this game, is the fact that your breath weapon, I think, scales with your health. So that is it's very common in shooters to, like, if you have an option or you have a power up, you die, you get hit, you lose that power up. But it feels like in other games like that, like I adore Corba Triangle or, you know, Gradius and all of that, it's so much harder to get yourself back up into fighting shape when I think you mentioned in your video, William, that you can have a great run and then all of a sudden you have a death spiral, quite literally, because you can't, you know, health pickups are quite sparing. And I feel like there were still some good ideas here that I wish had been used better. But the idea of going into space, I think that's where you find Takesis. And as I recall, she's just hanging out in space. Because when I saw the video, I thought, okay, does this game maybe have the Mind Flayers in space? And I'm thinking of Baldur's Gate 3, because I say that's really cool. But nope, Takesis is there. I was like, okay, cool. I know that in the book, she was kind of half-formed by the time the Dragons of Spring Dawning book finished. She needed that one element of the jewel to kind of put into the altar. And they have the altar there. And you can tell it's the picture that Larry Elmore had drawn of Takesis and the elf girl. What's her name, Lorana?
Yep.
there's a picture of her, like, kind of chained up in front of Takesis, and it's really freaking cool. And you can tell that's the basis for Space Dragon fight. But I was watching this fight that someone else was doing, because I'm just like, good lord, there's five heads, like 3,000 projectiles flying at you. Again, no slowdown. There might be a bit of flicker, but no slowdown. I have never finished this game. I never will. Have either of you finished this game?
Yeah. But okay. I have no regrets for the fact that I was using an emulator, and I would just save state so I didn't have to completely restart every level. I think that's a big flaw of the original game, is that the difficulty was so high and then you had to restart completely from the start of the level. There should have been a lot more checkpoints.
There's, I think you get one life, no checkpoints. There are two breath weapons, and I think I forgot to use one. Maybe that was my problem right there. You might have answered this already, Greg. Did you play Dragon Strike on the NES?
I played it a little bit, and I played it in preparation for this recording, and I did not have an emulator. I'm a weirdo, and I like to play on hardware, so I loaded it up on a flash drive, and did not have the luxury of sanity. There was definitely a moment where my wife heard me yelling from upstairs, and I was just like, the computer crashed, work call. I'm okay. And it is funny, like, it's so maddening, because in a way you want to reward someone for, like, playing well, but to be punished like that, it gave me, you know, I'm working backwards, but in my own personal history, it gave me flashbacks to Demon's Souls, where you just, congratulations, half your health bar is gone, because you lost in the tutorial. How sad for you. But it's funny, though, even though it is like a different style of game, there's something to just like that dogfight kind of just like, we're just going to play grab ass in circles until one of us is going to crash or shoot the other one. I think the thing that just like drove me mad is just I need it like widescreen. Like, I kept getting hit by shit from off screen, and that's probably why my wife heard me yelling, but
she's like, you're just like, stupid dragon.
Yeah, stupid dragon. That's the name of my coworker, and I'm not yelling at an old video game. But it's interesting. There's a lot of that's the thing. It's so frustrating. It's like there's a lot of really good ideas, but it's just like in that era where if you're not making a total banger, you're probably still finding your footing, figuring things out.
And it came out at a very particular era where shoot 'em ups were an existing genre, but bullet hells weren't yet.
Right.
And Dragon Strike on the NES clearly wanted to be a bullet hell, but they didn't have the mechanical language for it quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of flaws for that reason.
Yeah, when I was looking at Dragon Strike for the NES, at first I was like, oh, this is a very plain-looking game, and it is. But, William, you pointed out something very valid. That's the fact that when you are playing a shooting game, you want to know where you are and what you are shooting. And even though you have these people who are just kind of standing there and shoot, not even animated, they shoot arrows and throw rocks, it's just, well, at least you know what you're getting into. And to be honest, the space background is pretty cool.
The space background's really cool.
Yeah.
You also have it like a dummy thick hitbox, too.
Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily have.
Yeah.
And, you know, you play like a bullet hell game, it's like you got like a dot, and the rest of the graphics is just like window dressing. But this is just like driving a Buick in the sky.
That's what it feels like, doesn't it? Yeah. And the dragons have they're slow to turn around. And that's a big problem, because there used to be a bullet hell, like, kind of dragon game that I played. And God, it was ages ago, back when the mobile game market was like almost viable. But it's such a cool idea. Like, I think it was called for the NES. There was a game where you become a dragon and it's a shooting game. Was it Dragon Spirit, I think? Or was it by Namco?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. I don't remember the name, though.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah,
sounds dope.
Yeah, like, I mean, a shoot 'em up where you're a dragon, like, that is really dope, but you make it a bullet hell, it's even doper. But didn't really have that going on, unfortunately. I will say one thing that kind of ticks me off a little bit about the graphics for the NES version of the game, and this is very persnickety of me. When you have your selection of the bronze or silver or brass or gold dragon, the picture of the bronze dragon is a white dragon. They just recolored it, and I find that extremely annoying because, again, they took a picture from Elmore. Specifically, there's a picture he drew of a white dragon capsizing the ship in the Dragons of Winter, Winter Night, I think it was, in the beginning of that. They fight a white dragon. And I'm like, okay, well, I recognize that dragon, and it ain't a white dragon. Also, this game contains Copper Dragon and Brass Dragon Erasure. And I'm a little bit upset about that.
I hope someone is fired for that blunder.
I hope someone was fired for that blunder. Yeah, actually, talk a little about the... I don't know who put it in the notes. Was it you, Greg, about how popular Dragonlance was at the time? Because that was a little bit... Like, I got into Dragonlance later, so I wasn't sure, like, how popular it was at the time when this came out. If anyone has any idea, because I don't.
Oh, gosh. What was the exact release year? It was like...
The release year of the PC game was 1990.
90, yeah.
That would still be, like, pretty much in the heyday, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a cool older cousin who smoked and worked at an arcade, and he's the one who kind of got me into Dragonlance, greater concept. Yeah, I had a lot of, like, really cool older stewards. And so he had shelves of that shit, of the books and artwork and I remember, again, like I mentioned, not realizing that it was connected to this whole other board game. And then as I got into the board game, like finding out later it's related, and like how the whole thing kind of like materialized between this married couple. Why am I blanking on their names?
Margaret Weiss and...
It was Laura and Tracy Hickman?
Yeah.
There we go.
Who introduce themselves as the Hickman sisters sometimes because they're very funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that whole, like, how that was formed and, like, where TSR was at the time. And this was, like, the first D&D, like, multimedia thing.
I guess it was, yeah.
And that's so funny to think of now because it's like, you know, Hasbro will put out a movie and you see merchandise everywhere. You know, you see Happy Meals, you see all this stuff. And this was like the real first like attempt at it. And just kind of like looking at like all their approach to the different modules and the adventures, and like some adventures were like more like source books where they would just have like lore or descriptions of places. I think there's one module that is just a war game and not D&D, and like some people are like really into D&D, like weren't too hot on that. I think it's just so interesting that it all just kind of spawned out of TSR and the Hickmans wanting to be like, hey, there are enough dragons in Dungeons and Dragons, and dragons are pretty dope. What can we put dragons on? And it's like everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that's so funny about the way that the franchise worked is that the better Dragonlance was at being a multimedia franchise, the worse it succeeded at being a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah.
Because
the characters became so iconic that it felt like one of those licensed games where like, oh yes, there's a Firefly TTRPG, but like, you know you're not the main characters of Firefly. Mm. You're hanging out in someone else's world. And Dragonlance started to feel like that, where like, the heroes of the Lance, this is their world, and you can have some side adventures in it, you know?
Which they wrote a lot of, too, in that universe.
They wrote a lot of. So it did succeed at being a Dungeons & Dragons-like multimedia franchise, but it remarkably failed as a tabletop setting because of that.
That's actually very interesting, yeah, because as someone who I know, of course, of D&D, and I have played it a few times, and I love Baldur's Gate 3, the modules themselves are not something I know a whole lot about. Like, I know that you could play Dragonlance technically, but I don't know anyone who played it. And I guess the reason you mentioned is that to this day, if you play Dragon's Crown, that wizard is Raistlin. Like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, it's just, that's who a wizard is now to me and to a lot of people. It was great for games and books, not so much for actually playing in a module, I suppose. Have you ever played a Dragonlance D&D campaign?
No, I only know one person who has.
Do you remember what they played as? I'm just really interested.
No, I actually never asked them. I think they played a few. I'll have to ask her next time I see her.
It seems like outside of the fact that the world's so established in terms of these characters, like it would be a fun world to play in. Like you do feel like kind of an extra soldier in the Dragonstrike games, which is the way you should feel.
Yeah.
You are this soldier who is up and coming and trying to become a great legend, because again, at the end of Dragons of Spring Dawning, there are these huge fights with multiple people and there's dragons everywhere, and it's really awesome. So it can work as a game where you are on the outside looking in. It absolutely can. I really would have loved to see more like it in, like, heck, any module, but more Dragonlance is always good with me.
Mm-hmm.
What came after Dragonlance? Was that Ravenloft? Or I'm not sure how it works sometimes.
It was Ravenloft did come after. I'm blanking on the year. But I know it was Dragonlance and then Ravenloft.
Yeah,
also by the Hickmans.
Yeah.
Oh, was Ravenloft by the Hickmans?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, the reason I bring it up is just because of Simon's Quest. They stole the box art. They stole the artwork for the module for the box art for Simon's Quest. And I distinctly remember I was at a friend's house and they had the book for Ravenloft on the floor, and you have that picture of the vampire in the background, Sir what's his face, and I'm like, holy shit, that's Simon's Quest. I didn't even think about the fact that maybe they were inspired by other artwork, but that's something Konami did a lot, so it was absolutely not surprising.
Yeah, there ended up being just so many lawsuits and stolen pieces of IP and stuff all over early D&D.
Oh, I bet. Final Fantasy famously came across few of those, like the Beholder. We're going to have a Beholder. No, you're not. You're just not.
Yeah, well, like the original Final Fantasy, like their entire monster selection was just the monster manual of AD&D.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, Yoshitaka Amano drew some beautiful renditions of some classic monsters. There's artwork that recently went up of, like, he has the Warrior of Light fighting, like, I don't know, it's like a red dragon or a bronze dragon or something. It looks incredible. Yeah, I love his artwork. So I think, though, like, there's a couple of things they couldn't get away with, and the Beholder was definitely one of them.
Yeah. And one quick correction. I just double-checked the dates because I spoke too authoritatively. The first Dragonlance Adventures was 87. The first Ravenloft module was 83.
Okay,
that sounds more correct.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, the influence of like D&D and like Final Fantasy and Dragonlance is so funny because you look at, our two good, bad dragon gods here. They're basically Bahamut and Tiamat.
And Tiamat, yeah.
Just with, they're, you know, reskinned, you know, the evil one is a multi-headed dragon queen, and I don't know too many stories of Bahamut turning into a friendly wizard.
The wizard, Fizban.
But
Featherfall.
Yeah, I think it's just so interesting. And again, like, so much of, like, the iconography of, like, Dragonlance is just, like, it's just kind of permutated out into other properties that, yeah, like you said, Nadia, like, this is just what it looks like now, you know?
Yeah. know very much about, for example, the PC 98 port of this game. I was looking at it, and I actually consulted friend of the show.
I don't, actually. I don't know if it's much different.
Yeah, I consulted friend of the show, PC Audi, and he was saying how the game ran very slowly on the PC 98, and boy, howdy, it sure does. Now, I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, was it the PC 98 or the PC 88? Because I'm thinking, well, this game came out in 92 in Japan, and that was around the same time that we got the NES game over here. And I was looking at, again, this rendition of the game with completely different music. It's really fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's slow, but the graphics have this strange, smooth over quality. Like the PC, admittedly, the Japanese PC market is one of my more, like, you know, blank spots. It's something I'm working on. But, I just find it very interesting that they ported that. And I actually like looking at the videos of playthroughs for this game and seeing all the Japanese people saying, wow, I love this game, but boy, it was pretty hard. Because, yeah, both games were pretty difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And the one criticism I have to give for the original game over the NES game is that the PC game just seems to stop. Like, your last fight is with, I think, the Red and Black Dragon armies, which is, I can't remember where exactly it ended in terms of War of the Lance,
yeah.
But it just, it didn't have a showdown with Takesis the way that the NES version did.
I think the final boss is like a skeletal dragon, and then the narrative just kind of ends.
Yeah. Kind of, I always wondered if that was just because, like, they ran out of time, ran out of money, but it's a little disappointing nonetheless. But, yeah, come to think of it, I guess I was going to ask you this question too. Maybe you know this. Why, in the first place, were Bahamut and Tiamat renamed to Paladine and Takesis? Do you know? It was just for the fun?
I don't know. The only specific thing I know is that they are confirmed in the lore that, like, they are both, like, multi-dimensional beings, and they're not like, this is the Dragonlance version of that. Like, no, Tiamat and Takesis are the same being, but, you know, when Tiamat, like, pops their head into the Dragonlance setting, like, transforms into Takesis. That's all I really know.
A change
know.
Of clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Change of clothes.
By a change of clothes, going by the artwork, a change out of clothes.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in the Chronicles as well.
Yeah.
boobies.
But as to why they made them different, I'm not sure. I think they might have just liked the idea of a Queen of Darkness.
Well, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
We have a note here. R.I.P. Rick Parks. And I am unfortunately ignorant on specifically what aspect of the artwork Rick Parks did. Who can fill me in on that?
That was the sprite work, wasn't it?
Was he the sprite artist?
Oh, yeah, the artist behind the Eye of the Beholder and everything, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what a shame. He couldn't have been too old.
Yeah, like, he was not very old. I think he died in...
His leukemia.
Yeah,
he was pretty young. That's a shame.
And a lot of that art is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am actually quite ignorant. We were talking about this earlier, about the Genesis D&D games. Like, I think I was scared away because the NES, again, War of the Lance, had... the Dragonlance game, was it Heroes of the Lance it was called? It just looked really bad.
So. Yeah, it's famously bad. I'm actually going to be covering it next month, and I've been dreading it for literally 2 or 3 years.
Even that long, huh?
Yeah, well, my very first D&D video game video I put as a stretch goal that, I'm like, if we reach X number of likes, I'm gonna review the worst D&D video game ever.
And I'll take you up on that.
It was gonna be that, and I hit that goal, and I booted it up once, and I was like, I can't even figure out how to play this thing.
It's infamously bad.
Yeah, and so I just went, you know what, I'll cover the other contender for the worst D&D video game, which was Descent into Undermountain.
What's that for?
That's for DOS, I believe.
Like Dragon Strike.
And it's just taking the Descent engine, like the old flight games, Descent.
Yeah.
And just hacking that engine into a dungeon crawler.
Oh my God, that sounds like a mess.
It does not work at all. It's really bad.
The dungeon crawling freak in me is just like, that sounds kind of dope.
I mean, the one thing the that it does have is that because of the engine that they hacked it into, they have like levitation mechanics that you can do. You can drink like a potion of levitation and get into cool places.
Like, I get the cool. Flying it. Like, it sounds like I get the idea that they took like a jet bomber and put it in dungeon, and like that's you got to play this game now where you're a plane in a dungeon crawler. That does sound kind of dope, actually, but sounds like hell.
It was not that, though. It was just you. It's a regular D&D game, except they built it in a flight engine.
That is the funniest thing I've heard today.
I don't know why. I think it was just because the rights for D&D video games had just been lost. So it was a new company that had it. I covered this forever ago. The memories are now fuzzy, but it was a new company had it, and they were trying to like rush out this game. Oh no, it was one of the last SSI games. They were trying to rush this thing out before they lost the license, and they had to spend all of their dev time trying to make this engine vaguely work because they owned the Descent engine and they're like, we want to use it for something. And they spent sure all of their dev time hacking the engine and none of the dev time making a good game.
And somehow this game is still better than the Dragonlance game on the NES.
It is. Yes, definitively.
The NES game is so bad that the first time I even saw it, I did not recognize it as a Dragonlance game because it just looks so gray and generic. And you're absolutely right. You can't figure a thing out. But I guess on the Genesis, ironically, since the SNES system is known more for RPGs than the Genesis, that's where they hit some kind of stride for consoles, at least, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure what it was, but they had two Genesis games. I've only played the one so far. I want to play the other. It looks very similar. And those are like the most unknown D&D games of the era. And I'm not sure why, but they're really good. They're probably the best ones of the early 90s outside of Eye of the Beholder. Many opinions are in that statement, but you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Who did they lose the license to?
They lost it to Interplay.
Really?
Well, more specifically, SSI had all of they had the license for all of D&D. And right. Then very briefly, Wizards of the Coast tried to split up the license and give it to give different settings to different game
That's
companies.
Right.
And we don't know who got what. That doesn't appear to be public information. But we know that I think it was Activision, someone got Ravenloft, and they made a really bad Ravenloft fighting game. And that's
is that Iron and Blood?
Yeah, Iron and Blood.
That's infamous.
Yeah,
infamous.
And that's basically the only product that came out of the like split license. No other studio actually managed to get anything out other than Interplay, who got the main Forgotten Realms license. And that's also why all of the video games like Baldur's Gate and stuff, that's why they were all Forgotten Realms, is because that was the chunk of the setting that Interplay had. And
interesting.
We don't know when they got the rest, but they clearly did get the rest at some point. The license is very cloudy, but it like plays a big point in the history of which games were being made and why.
That's really interesting.
I'm recalling EA published Eye Beholder for GBA.
Yes.
Really?
That was another kerfuffle. That's another long story.
Those are words that should not go together by the sounds of it. Was it like a...
It's not great. I was just kind of... I'm a dungeon crawling guy, and I had an analog pocket that I recently got, and I was just kind of like going through the games and seeing stuff that I didn't play. And I said, Eye of the Beholder, that'd be really fun. And it was an EA port of Eye of the Beholder for GBA. It's exactly what that string of words sounds like.
Wow. Was it like, okay, so was it like a 3D? Because I know the GBA could do like kind of pseudo 3D really well, but I guess it didn't really work out this time.
The GBA can technically do 3D. It is possible. It shouldn't try to do 3D.
Yeah.
It's good at certain things, and it should just stay in its lane.
Yeah, that's understandable. Here's my problem with the world today, besides everything else, is that there's so few good games that are like Dragon Strike that really put you on the back of a dragon, put you against hopeless odds. The last game I maybe played like it was Panzer Dragoon Ultra, but that's not nearly what I want out of a Dragonlance game. Why is this genre so neglected? Unless I'm missing something completely that's off in the distance that I just don't know about. Why do we not have more? I mean, even if you remember Lair for the PS3, that garbage piece of like mistake, it was supposed to be a Dragonlance game. And unfortunately, they turned it into a showcase for a controller that didn't work. So I will die bitter about that. And
I didn't know that it was supposed to be a Dragonlance game.
Isn't that sad?
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
What a, like a, wow, we just went into like a wrong timeline between how that game came out and the license. Man, that's a bummer.
That really is a bummer. It's just something about the license. Like, going back very briefly, there is an ongoing series called The Worst Fighting Game by Matt McMuscles, and it's just like him evaluating different games and like fighting games and how bad they are. I'm pretty sure the number one spot right now goes to Iron and Blood for being the worst. Something might have usurped it or come close to it, but yeah, that was again another example of like, hey, we taking an engine and just putting it somewhere it doesn't belong. Yeah. And not really a flight engine going into a dungeon crawler, not anything as interesting as that, but yeah. It should be mentioned actually that this game, Dragon Strike, it came to Steam quite recently. Like, I think it's been a few years, but the fact of the matter is someone remembered it and put it on Steam, and I think that's great. I did not check the modding community. I really should have, but I would love a future where we see another version of Dragon Strike with 3D. Take Microsoft Flight Sim and put some dragons in it, please. I will even play this in real life, like call it a Nier sequel. I don't care. Or Drakengard sequel.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, when I was looking at the level in the NES version of the game and they have the dragon flying it, kind of a very modern-looking town, because I know it's supposed to be like a medieval castle town, but it looks very modern. I'm like, oh, shit, this is Drakengard now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm the only Nier sicko here, but...
You're not. Drakengard is just, it's a slog.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I love me some Yoko Taro dragons in the modern age causing the destruction of man sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with the DOS version of Dragon Strike is that it's so cool, but like you really have to use your imagination to fill in a lot of the gaps.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Can't see the archers that are shooting at you. You just have to know if you fly too close to this one house on a cliff, you're going to get pelted until you die.
Yeah.
And also, this is just like a random thing. There's no nighttime levels.
Nope.
Yes.
That's nighttime, sunset, that'd do a lot. There's just like, your mind has to like fill in a lot of the imagination with this. And I'm okay with that, but by the end, it escalates so quickly. It starts with you're just kind of like fighting like a couple dudes who are just like hanging and idling and waiting for you to kill them. And then it escalates to, you know, you've got multiple armies flying around, arrows going everywhere, there's ships, you know, and
it still just looks like a green field.
Yeah. And let me ask you all this. The graphics settings, did you play with sprites or polygons?
I played with sprites.
You played with Stretch.
I think I played with polygons, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I toggle between the two because the polygons, it's just like a Star Fox 64-ass yeah. like bird thing floating, yeah. which I love.
Our wings.
But there's like, I don't think you can actually see a rider on there. And
If I played with sprites, would I have been able to see the riders? Oh, whoops.
You can see the riders. Yeah.
You can see the riders.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely didn't see that when I was playing. I just saw the polygons flying around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do appreciate, though, that they do try to give you some level scaling where when you start, you are chasing the dragons. They are not facing you, so they can't really use their breath weapons on you. And it's just a tutorial on how to speed up, how to use your breath weapon, and how to just kind of crash into things. It's like jousts. You got to just kind of crash into there and hope for the best. But yeah, it's the original game is very elegant in many ways, and I think it's so deserving of a remake. Question is, I don't know what the hell Hasbro wants with Dragonlance, let alone D&D. I don't know if they know what they want from it. So I don't
think they put out a book recently.
They did, yeah. And a new rule set and everything to go along with it.
Oh, that's right. See, I know they had a new novel set, but I didn't know I forgot about the rule set as well. Oh,
yeah. They refreshed. They, you know, people call it 5.5 or version 2024 or whatever. It's not hugely different from 5e. You know, by design. But I do remember that they did put out either a source book, I think, for Dragonlance, and there was some kerfuffle around that. I think there was like a lawsuit involving the Hickmans and
I think you're right.
Dragonlance fans, you know, they like their Dragonlance, and Hasbro is a conglomerate that just wants to turn everything into a lifestyle brand now. So
yeah.
And it's funny just how many lawsuits are involved with all this. Like we were talking about Ravenloft Iron and Blood earlier. I don't think it was specifically an Iron and Blood specific lawsuit, but Ravenloft caused a whole kerfuffle because, you know, the Hickmans made that setting, and the Hickmans also made Dragonlance, but TSR and then eventually Wizards of the Coast owned both those brands. And then there was a lawsuit because when Lord Soth, one of the villains of Dragonlance, died, they were just like, yeah, when he died, he got transported to Ravenloft.
Oh, is that how that happened?
Yeah. And then he was the villain in Iron and Blood. He's the one who you're all fighting to defeat. Like a 3D model of him. And that caused a big lawsuit because Lord Soth was not cleared by the Hickmans to be in a different setting, even though it was also a Hickman setting. It causes, there's so many lawsuits that have happened over these
IPs. I didn't even think that would be a conflict, I could now see how it would be, because I remember why is Lord Soth and Raven in Ravenloft, but whatever. It made sense, because it's a Death Knight. Frankly, the ending of what happens with him and Kitiara in the end of Dragons of Spring Dawning, that's terrifying. And maybe he didn't need to exist after that, because that was good enough for me, but they brought back, you know how it is, they brought back everyone.
Yeah.
I do have to admit, there was the secondary set of Chronicles. I can't remember what they were called specifically, but I liked them a lot. I thought they were well written. You had the one, I can't remember what the first one was, but
new generation?
It wasn't the one that was recent. It was the one that was before that. They had a story about Kitiara, Dragons of Highlord Skies. That was what it was called. That was great. I love that. And they had one about Raistlin, and that was also great. I think Dragons of the Time Glass Mage. And new generation, I haven't read it yet. I've heard mixed things about it. Have you read it yet, Will?
I don't remember. A lot of it was because my podcast where we're doing the reread, we're still just on the first book right now. So in my teenage years, it was very scattered because we would just read what the bookstores and libraries had. We weren't terribly organized. We were a bunch of teenagers. We didn't even actually know this was connected to D&D. We just had this book series we liked.
It's a little vague at first, isn't it?
Yeah, and there were so many books. There were over 100 books that we'd just be like, that's a Dragonlance book, let's buy it. And then we just trade it back and forth between our friend group. So I don't remember which ones I've read and which ones I haven't.
It's actually funny when I think about it. Dragonlance, I didn't really realize it was connected to D&D until I started playing more Final Fantasy, and I'm like, wow, these blue dragons use lightning just like they do in Dragonlance. And then I realized eventually, oh, that is a TSR thing. That is an overall, just they have a chromatic dragon. So that's what they do. They go around spitting fire and lightning and crap like that. So I don't know. I like interconnected multiverse stuff like that long before Marvel did it. So good stuff overall. Yeah, maybe someday. Actually, before we finish, this is another question I just kind of had for you, Will. You mentioned like the splitting of the properties. Would that be around the time that we had the, what was it called, the War of the Souls in Dragonlance? Like they did the Dragons of Summer Flame, and they got rid of the gods, and they brought in the True Moon or some crap. Or I'm thinking Final Fantasy IV.
I don't know. I think I only read one Dragonlance book that was that late in the timeline, and it was so different that it was, like, incomprehensible to me. I was like, what, heart magic? What are we talking about now? When did this become a thing?
I'll be honest, I don't remember it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I my memories outside of Chronicles and The New Generation. Those are the only two series that I like have clear, non-jumbled memories of. So I'm afraid I don't really know how the splitting of the game license affected Dragonlance, if at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the timing is quite right, but it just kind of feels like Wizards of the Coast came in and said, hey, everyone, we're doing things this way now. And a lot of things they said got fragmented, but it could have been a separate issue. I'm sure someone in the comments will fill us in, because you commenters are very awesome, and I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have. Did you, either of you, have any final thoughts about this really interesting, cool game? Will, you go first.
Oh, sure. I was actually just going to kind of push back to a question we didn't quite
please do.
End up talking out in full, which is why I think nobody's making games like this anymore.
Oh, please, please answer.
And yes. I think it's because of the original Baldur's Gate. You know, we were talking about Heroes of the Lance before, and we also briefly mentioned Gold Box, I think. So the Gold Box games were like the D&D CRPGs. Then there was the Silver Box games, which was everything else. All the weird stuff. and it was mostly, you know, it started out with Heroes of the Lance. The Silver Box didn't get to a good start.
No.
But then the subsequent games were a lot better. And even when they kind of got rid of the Gold Box and Silver Box, there were still those two strategies of like, here's the CRPGs and here's everything else. And Dragon Strike is one of those like legacy of the Silver Box games. It's one of the everything else games.
Oh, I thought it'd be a gold game.
No, the Gold Box games were purely on the Gold Box engine. And then all of its successors were modified versions of it, and just eventually just kind of CRPGs in general. And throughout the 90s, there was this sort of gold and silver box diverted approach. And then we hit Baldur's Gate, which was such a smash hit that everyone went, this approach, the CRPG approach, has won. And it like it very much affected tabletop based fantasy games forever after. When you think about those games, when you think about like a D&D video game, your brain goes to CRPGs now. So we that legacy of the Silver Box games, the everything else tabletop games, has more or less died out. And it's quite sad, because there's a lot of room for great things like a Dragonlance remake. We had mentioned very briefly before, we said, Dungeons and Dragons, Stardew Valley type game. That would be a Silverbox approach game. There's many great things you could do that are not CRPGs using tabletop stuff. I want to shake these companies and be like, come on, do it.
That's very interesting insight. That's a good way of looking at it. Never thought about that.
And I think a point counter to that is that RPGs now are like almost like another layer that you put on to other video games. Like the idea of like what RPG now is so, I don't want to say muddied because that sounds negative, but it's like it's just been incorporated in so many other games, right?
Absolutely.
Like Street Fighter has an RPG style mode to it, right? Where so I think there's room. But yeah, to your point, well, Baldur's Gate just really just kind of completely changed how people kind of thought of CRPGs. And I don't know. I think we can do a Dragon Strike and it's not as RPG-y, even though
I still love a stat screen in a Dragon Strike game. But yeah.
I do like it.
Yeah.
I do like just seeing all those meters and bars and having an inventory and...
Even the radar is like a dragon orb, like from the Chronicles.
Did you guys notice you can trade the radar away?
I was just going to say that. That's
you can?
The thing that's so, yeah. So when you're, it's a branching campaign.
Right.
And if you want to change orders, like you got to sacrifice items. And
that's right.
Most people just sacrifice the healing stuff. But if you're a fucking sicko, you can sacrifice your radar and your little arrow pointy thingy. And
you have
just
no
fight.
Way of finding
and
any
you're just
of the
blind.
Just bareback. Wow.
You've got nothing but the flat polygons to tell you where they are. And
it is not a very
lost
good. It's not a very good draw distance either. You can't see the other dragons on the horizon.
What's your reward?
You get to keep your healing items.
Yep.
Okay.
Is a thing.
Okay. So. Wow. Yeah. Because I remember I had to finish this game, but I had played it quite far into the campaign. I remember now, like, yeah, okay. I didn't do that, though. I'm pretty sure I gave up my healing items, so I usually forgot to use them anyway. You don't heal in between battles. I learned that the hard way. Thanks,
nope.
Fizban. Dick.
Yep.
I love that he just shows up and he's like, you look like shit. Here's some ointment. And then just pieces out. He's gone.
Yep.
I actually love the fact that they mentioned in the instruction booklet that Fizban volunteers you. So it's very much the thing that Fizban does, where it's like, hey, I'm going to go into this inn and start shit. Oh, well, guess you guys are on the road now. Bye. That's just what he does. About you, Greg, any final thoughts about this really cool game?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, the surface level, you just get it, and then there's just so many interesting wrinkles. Like, it took me a second to realize that there's branching paths, you know, like,
yeah.
Which I associate with Star Fox, because, you know, that's...
Yes.
I love Star Fox, and I love that that branching paths.
I play the third level all the time. I used to be able to do that without hits. I used to be crazy.
So, oh, wow. I love that. I love that you have separate hitbars for the rider and the dragon, and so there's just so all these little touches, and like, yeah, the way that you can just give away your radar and you hold on to your healing items, like the fact that the radar is like a tangible thing and not just a HUD element, it just, even though it's a flight sim, it has so much of that RPG DNA that I love. I love that, like, how every level, I love the narration for every level, even though it's kind of like silly because it's like the good dragon showed up and the bad dragons were like, and then you fly off.
Out of here.
There's something like funny about like there's a good army and a bad army that, like, when you read it, it sounds kind of stupid.
A little black and white.
Yeah. But, you know,
Dragonlance.
Yeah. But yep. I love the narration and that your death is narrated. Like,
that's really cool.
They really hammer home that, like, you died and the world moved on. Like, that, there's just something to that. There's all these, like, little wrinkles to it. And I think the core, like, interplay of, like, how the mechanics work when you're flying is just, like, so elegant. I like all of it. It's just, I need a little more horsepower. I need more than a frame a second. I need more than PowerPoint frame rate. And maybe to see the archers. But despite everything, I have a weird soft spot for it and how ambitious it was.
Also, your dragon can land and eat people.
Yeah. your dragon just looks, turns around and says, I'm hungry. Let's
eat. I'm hungry.
And then you like park him down, and then you just see some legs.
And is there any point to that? All I know is he says he yells he's hungry, but he'll still fight until.
I've not found any mechanical effect, but the rule book says it's real bad.
Yeah, the rule book says it's bad because then he'll like, I don't know what the effect is, but he'll keep haunting you. Like he'll get real hangry. He'll just be like, I'm hungry, let's eat. And you've got like 9 arrows in your face, and you're just like, I need to shoot this ship. And he's like, I need to eat a guy.
I need to eat a guy. We got like, we're surrounded by 9 dragons. Yeah, but I need to eat a guy.
All right, let me pull over.
It is like pulling out a McDonald's for the kids. Dad, I'm hungry. All right, fine. Eat this person. Yeah. This orc.
It's okay. He's in the bad army.
He's a bad guy, so it's fine.
He doesn't have a wife and kids.
Yeah.
So this has been a lot of fun. I've had a really good time. And I've learned a lot about the Dragonlance and D&D license in general. And if this is a just, sane world, which it is not, we will someday see some kind of remake to this game. There is a spiritual successor, though, isn't there? Like, I don't know if it's out yet or if it's coming out.
It's a board game, right? Yeah, the board game. You guys can see in here, I've got the board game right behind me.
Cool.
You can't really see it super well, but to the audio listeners, there's a board game called Dragon Strike that I guess all the listeners are audio listeners. there's a Dragon Strike board game where it was someone who had played it as a kid and they remembered it, and they run a wargaming company, and they found out that apparently you can just like make a board game called Dragon Strike, and Wizards of the Coast doesn't have that copy written in such a way that prevents you from doing it. So it's a spiritual successor rather than anything else, but it's just called Dragon Strike, and you control little dragon figurines and you try and get them to joust each other. And it's remarkable how, if you've played the video game, specifically the flight sim version, not the NES version, it's remarkable how they got that, like, the difficulty with like lining up your curves and turns and stuff. They so accurately got that in the board game.
That's really cool.
It's quite fun. It's for up to 4 people. You battle 8 dragons. It's really good. I'd recommend it.
That's awesome. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a bit more about your YouTube channel, etc.
Sure. You can find me at youtube.com/WilliamSRD. And like I said, I cover the video game adaptations of tabletop franchises. D&D's very much the bread and butter. If you liked any of the stuff I was saying today about how just utterly bizarre and complicated the D&D video game license is, I cover that stuff all the time. Every single game I talk about, I'm like, all right, and here's the way that the license affected all the things wrong with this game.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Cool topic.
Yeah, thank you. And then you could also, if you want to follow along with Dragonlance, you can find me at a little podcast called It's Called a Lance.
I like that.
Awesome.
How about you, Greg? Anything you want to promote?
When I'm not contributing occasional cover art to Retronauts, I am making a webcomic. If you like dragons and fantasy and a little bit of horror and, shall we say, meddling kids, my webcomic, Monsters and Mysteries, has a little bit of that, a lot of bit of that. It's my baby. And you can find that at mnmcomic.com. Next month, I'm starting a new chapter, which has a big old red dragon on it. I just put cover art out.
Ooh.
I'm real excited for that. So
that's awesome. Dragons are always cool. Dragons are always excited about. Yeah. Always get excited about dragons up here and here. As for myself, I have been your host. I'm Nadia Oxford. If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our Patreon. It's over at patreon.com/retronauts. You can support us there at one of our tiers, like at the $5 tier. You can get 2 extra full-length episodes a month. You'll also get episodes a week early and ad-free, and access to the Retronauts Discord. The ultra $64 level of the Patreon lets you set the topic of Retronauts once every 6 months, plus you get all the other good stuff. And if you can give us $100 a month, you will land a chance to be a guest on the show every 4 months, You know you want to get on here and talk about more dragons. You do. As for myself, again, I am the co-host of Axe of the Blaggod as well, where we cover RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. We have a lot of writing and streaming going on these days. I'm doing a weekly newsletter at the $5 tier, which if you like games writing and are kind of missing that old-fashioned, down-home, cooked, country-fried, whatever-the-hell games writing that used to exist, I got a lot of that going on. I've been at this for 20 years, probably more, and it's the way I eat. I eat you when you eat, when you read my words. That's how it works. But until next time, when Tequisas rises, don't go dragging your ass.